Happy Monday and happy President's Day, everybody. Thank you so much, as always, for joining us here on the Be Our Guest podcast. It's a great day to talk some Disney, and we're going to talk a little baseball, some spring training down at Walt Disney World, as well as his recent trip report. Jared is standing by to share his expertise because he is an expert when it comes to both. So stand by for that. First, a quick word from our sponsors. And of course, that is our friends over at the Running Buddy. .com. If you're planning a trip to the happiest place on earth, you need to share your love for your favorite mouse with the Running Buddy's new Disney Luxe Travel Collection. They offer a variety of products like Mickey and Minnie Mouse backpacks, purses, magnetic hands-free buddy pouches just like I wear for every race and every run, and much more. You even get a free Disney pin with each purchase. Also, a special gift to the Be Our Guest podcast listeners, use the code BEOURGUEST for 10% off at checkout. Check them out today over at therunningbuddy.com. Save time and money on your next Walt Disney World, Disneyland, or Universal vacation with our friends over at touringplans.com, the official website for the unofficial guide to Walt Disney World. They have the trip planning tools to show you the least crowded park to visit every day, customized touring plans for visiting Disney's best rides, honest restaurant reviews, how to save on Disney tickets, the best hotel rooms to ask for, and so much more. For less than the cost of a customized magic band down at Walt Disney World, you're getting 365 days of great information. Check them out today and let Len know that we said hello over at touringplans.com.
Ready to take a trip to the world? You found the Be Our Guest Walt Disney World Trip Planning Podcast. This is where your memories come front and center on our podcast stage.
Welcome to episode 1448 of the Be Our Guest Walt Disney World Trip Planning Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Rallman, from BeOurGuestPodcast.com and one of the senior agents over at the Magic for Less Travel. Happy Monday to you. Happy President's Day. If you're lucky today, maybe you got the day off. If not, hey, just like the rest of us, we're out there hustling and working and getting things done. But thanks for checking in with us for some Disney talk. And you know that I'm from St. Louis, Missouri, which if you don't know, and this is just going to kill Matt Parrish down in Springfield and all my friends on the western side of Missouri, but we consider St. Louis, Missouri to be known as baseball heaven. We love our St. Louis Cardinals here. And I've grown up, a lot of people in St. Louis grow up playing ball. I mean, it's just kind of the language of the city. And today we're going to talk Disney, but we're also going to talk some spring training baseball because it is that time. Pitchers and catchers have already reported, and the full rosters will be showing up for the Grapefruit League and the Cactus League. And so it's time to get that leather out and get the balls out and start, you know, playing catch and running the bases. So we're going to have a good time today. Disney talk and baseball talk. Joining me today, glad to have him back on the show, an expert from the Wall Street Journal, Jared. Jared, how you doing today? I know that you do this for a living, so glad to have you on the show.
I am glad to be here. You know, I was on MLB Network recently for about an hour and a half, but I said, no, this is much more fun. I'd rather talk with you.
Okay, well, I need to get it on the record. Brian Kenny or me? Because I've talked to folks on Twitter about Brian Kenny, and I am not a sabermetrics fan. I'm a kind of a baseball purist. I just like the game for the game. So where do you fall on that?
Well, I'm afraid that Brian Kenny's Twitter followers are a little more rabid than yours. So if I don't say him, I'm not sure I'm going to get back on their show. So
That's true. He has a little bit more ratings than I do. But I love baseball for what it is. But yeah, of course, we're a Disney podcast. We're going to be talking about, you just took a recent trip, so we're going to be talking about some of the highlights from that. But since you're an expert, you know, you do, well, tell everybody in our audience what you do for a living, because you do have, I mean, I think my job is pretty cool, planning Disney trips every day, all day, but I think you have me beat.
Well, my job is definitely a fun conversation starter for sure. I'm the national baseball writer at the Wall Street Journal. So I cover Major League Baseball as an industry for the paper and the WSJ.com. And as a result, I get to spend a lot of time watching baseball games for free from very good seats in stadiums all around the country and come up with the hopefully interesting stories that maybe some of you have even read before. So now you know what I sound like. If you've read my stories and never heard my voice, this is it. I hope it's okay.
You know, I know Heather's going to like this one. She's a huge Phillies fan that listens to our show. So she's going to enjoy it. We got lots of huge baseball fans. I know Sox fans up there. They're crazy. You know, I love the I love all the Yankees fans. Hey, don't start yelling at me on Twitter. I'm a Cardinals fan. But we're just going to talk some baseball in general. So one of the things that I think that you can really combine your love of Disney and baseball, and there's a lot of us where those two things intersect, is going down to Florida for Grapefruit League baseball, you know, spring training. And it's because I got to go a long time ago when my dad caught one of the Phillies pitchers. He flew our family down. We got to spend a week down in Clearwater. I had really kind of unfettered access. I pitched off the bullpen mounds. You know, I played catch with Pete Rose. I mean, think about that, like Joe Morgan, Ivan de Jesus, Mike Schmidt, Steve Carlton. That was an all-star team. It was unbelievable. But, you know, going down to spring training is a very special thing because if you're a baseball fan, a lot of times when your team's in regular season, you're watching from afar. But it's very much a more intimate experience when you're down at spring training, right?
If you're a baseball fan and you have not been to spring training yet, I would really make it a priority at some point to do it because it really is an experience unlike anything else. It is far different than the experience at a major league stadium, especially it's far, far different than watching on television. This is the closest you can get to real up close and personal access with the players that you see on TV. And it's spring training, so that everyone's kind of relaxed. You're able to get very, very close. At some facilities, you could get really close, almost right up against a fence where the guys are working out. And it's just really exciting. And if you go to the games are in small stadiums with just a few thousand seats. The tickets are cheap, and you just get to have a nice day in the warmth, especially from the north. You're just nice to sit out there in the sun and check out some games. And if you're a Disney fan, it's so easy to do because we think of, as Disney fans, we think of Florida and Walt Disney World, I think sometimes interchangeably, but they're not the same thing. There's so much else going on in Florida, just sort of a spitting distance, a short drive away from, you know, those purple signs. So it's a easy way if you're looking for sort of a half day or a day trip to just do something different. So maybe some people in your party want that experience that's sort of away from the parks. It's so easy to do right there, right near Disney.
So I think lots of Disney fans know, and maybe you don't know because I think, you know, the baseball fans and Disney fans probably know, but maybe it's something that you've never caught on to, that over the past couple of decades, I guess, maybe at least a decade, the Atlanta Braves have had their spring training home at ESPN's Wide World of Sports right there on Walt Disney World property. If you've run the marathon, you know that they're the home of this is their last season, but this is where the Braves have spring training because we run, it seems like, every square inch of that facility during the marathon. But it's, you know, I think that would be, you know, this spring coming up because they are moving after this year. But it's a great opportunity to have a Disney vacation. But like you said, really get that taste of baseball from a different perspective. So what's it like? Because I can tell you, you know, the last couple of years, the first thing I've looked at when the Cardinals announced their spring training schedule, I know the Cardinals are in Jupiter, so that's South Florida. But I always look to see, when do they play the Braves in Orlando? Because I'm like, oh man, if I could just swing it like a weekend trip or like 3 or 4 days when the Cardinals are in town, that would be great because I get my Cardinals fix, my Disney fix all in one trip. So what is that like when you've been to Wide World of Sports? You know, if somebody wants to check this out this last season over at ESPN.
Yeah, this is your last chance. The Braves have been over there since 1997. They're moving out the end of this year to Northport, Florida, which is in Sarasota County. So this is your last chance to see spring training baseball on Disney property. There's no expectation that another team is going to take the facility. So this is it. So look, it's very convenient. It's certainly the most convenient stadium to Disney property. And it's right there sort of on the outskirts by one of the entrances to property. It's a small stadium, about 7,500 seats. There is Disney transport there on game day, or it's a very short, easy Uber ride. And it's a really fun experience because it really does combine the baseball spring experience and the Disney experience the way no other spring training facility sort of is able to do. You will actually see, you know, Mickey Mouse coming out onto the field wearing baseball attire before games, and some other characters, and sort of fooling around and doing stuff with the fans and coming into the crowd and doing all this fun stuff between innings. So that's really cool. And look, it's almost every day from, you know, mid-February to the end of March. Every single day, there's stuff going on there, whether it's workouts, whether it's actual games. And it's really easy just to swing over. You know, for the games, you need to buy tickets. But if there's no game, the workouts are typically free. You could go over there. You could go hang out on the back fields. The main stadium is where the games are, but there's lots of other fields sort of out beyond the wall where fans get to sort of walk around and see the players playing catch and taking fly balls, maybe get some autographs. It's a really cool experience.
Yeah, man, I'd love to go see the backfields because they say that's where the coaching and the teaching really happens. And, you know, the older I get, the more I'm into the fundamentals and seeing how you develop your, you know, future stars. While it'd be great to see your superstars of today, you know, maybe jacking them out during batting practice, you know, just cranking them out there in the outfield. You know, I like to see both, you know, you never get to see that otherwise, the learning and the stuff, the guys that'll be in the minors, but they might be the stars 2-3 years down the line. So that sounds really interesting. And you say that, you know, you kind of have access where you can walk around the facility a little bit.
Yeah, and it's amazing the kind of stuff they do. It's the kind of stuff that you almost can't imagine professional players doing. They spend, you know, early on in spring training, if you're there around now, because the Braves report on February 15th, which is, if not now, it's very, very soon, right? It's coming up. They spend days and weeks on pitchers fielding ground balls or covering first base or bunt coverages, these things that maybe you have not seen anyone do since Little League. These guys spend literally hours and hours and hours working on this stuff. And if you're close enough, which you can be at spring training, you could literally hear what the players are saying to each other, what the coaches are saying to the players as they're going through these drills. They'll do drills without any balls. They'll just pretend. They'll fake hit a ball to the first base, and the pitcher will just run over to cover the base and fake catch a toss just to get the muscle memory down of what they have to do. But look, they do these every single day for hours and hours at this time of year. So when it's April and May, it's second nature. They just know how to do it.
Oh, and then my reliever in August will forget to cover first base on a ball to second, you know, like in the hole between first and second. And I'm like, you did that 100 times in spring training. Oh, I know. It just drives me nuts. Hey, now we didn't talk about this in the pre-show, but if anybody's going to know about this, I think it's you. And I'm a little bit older than you, so maybe we'll see. When I was younger, I used to remember on Saturday mornings, I'd get up and I'd watch This Week in Baseball with Mel Allen. That was like my favorite show. I mean, I still love that song. But was there not a place years ago, I don't even think it exists anymore. Actually, I did a little research, I think, a few years back, but I can't really remember. It was called Boardwalk in Baseball, where the Royals had their spring training. Do you remember that? Was that in Florida?
It was in Florida. The Royals used to be in Florida. It was in something called Haines City, Florida, which I honestly don't exactly know where it is, sort of relative in the state, but it was sort of like a small theme park.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. It's kind of the closest we have to what we have now.
I think if you drove west on I-4, maybe like 45 minutes, it was sort of in that range, I think. That would have been fun to see. The Royals, they did used to be there, I think, once upon a time, too.
Yeah, I used to see that on TV, like, oh, man. Because I was probably, you know, that was like my prime baseball age, probably like 10, 12. And I'm like, man, I'm going down there to the Royal Spring Training because there was like roller coasters, Ferris wheels, and of course, baseball. And, of course, that's what we have with Atlanta over at Wide World of Sports. So, final tips on spring training because, you know, I would imagine that when, you know, like say the Red Sox, because I'm pretty sure they're in Florida with that, when I'm watching them on TV in spring training, I swear, it's like, are they at Fenway or are they at spring training? Because that field looks exactly the same. But when the opposition team comes in to play the Braves at Wide World of Sports, I'm sure it's kind of a takeover of the away teams. Because I know Cardinals have a huge following and I would travel in to see them play the Braves so I can see my team. So is it like that where the opposition is kind of, they rally in that one game because they might be at Disney anyway?
Yeah, there's a lot of people that sort of plan their Disney trips sort of involving spring training, right? It's not all they do, but they may spend a day or two instead of going to the parks to go to the games if they're a big fan or if they're in Florida for something else, they'll come over and also plan their trip to Central Florida to go check out a game, maybe hit the parks the next day or that night or something like that. It's also important to remember that there are a lot of spring training stadiums dotted around Florida, and quite a few of them are relatively close to Disney properties. So I think this is something to think about if you are You know, you may be with a larger group where not everyone has the same interest. There might be someone in your party that may not be as interested in going to the parks and may want to sort of get themselves out there, try something else. So going to the beach, of course, is an option, but there are other stadiums if you're there in February, March. For instance, the Detroit Tigers play in Lakeland, which is about 40 minutes away from Disney property. The Yankees in Tampa, just over an hour. The Phillies are in Clearwater. That's about a 90-minute drive. The Blue Jays, if you're I know you have some Canadian listeners, right? I'm sure they're listening. Oh, yeah. That's about an hour, 30, 40 minutes away as well. So, look, it's very easy to grab a rental car for the day, swing over in the morning, go check out a game. You could be back at Disney by 5:30, 6 o'clock, get dinner, see some fireworks, whatever. And I know always, I listen to your question shows. I hear this all the time. There's always those emails from people that say, I'm really into Disney, but my wife is not, or my brother-in-law is not, or my husband's not. How do I convince them? What's something else I could sort of entice them with to let me sort of take the trip I want to take? Well, I think this is one of those things. If it's February, March, it's, hey, yeah, we'll go to the parks a few days, but there's also a day or two or half a day or two of baseball involved as well. And that may get some converts. Then you get them in the park and all of a sudden they're hooked.
Yeah, it's like the alternate to the beach day, really. I mean, because we used to always go over to Cocoa Beach because my wife wanted to have a beach day, like a down day where we weren't standing in line all day. We could relax. We weren't running from place to place. I mean, sounds like baseball to me. Get a lawn chair. Some of these fields, you can sit up on the grass in the outfield on a berm and, you know, get some popcorn, a hot dog. Oh, my gosh. I am missing baseball so bad right now talking about this. Real quick, one more thing, and then we'll get to your trip. What of the stadiums in Florida, which ones, if you had to recommend one, you know, that's reasonably close. I don't know if like South Florida is, but maybe it is. Which one in Florida has the best fan experience for spring training, do you think?
Yeah, it's interesting. So it kind of depends what you're looking for. You know, you mentioned, for instance, where the Red Sox play. That's down in Fort Myers. It's actually not close to Disney at all, but I'm just going to use it as an example. That is really like a small major league stadium. It's a very beautiful facility, but it feels a little more like a big league facility. Then if you go over to, say, the Tigers, that's a good example. I mentioned them really close. It's the closest one to Disney, except for the Braves. That is a really old facility where Tigers, called Tiger Town, where it's located. It's an older facility, which is great for the fans because it just has that old-timey baseball field where you can really get up close and personal. The same goes, actually, in a way, where the Cardinals and Marlins play. It's not very old stadium in Jupiter, which is in South Florida, about a maybe two hour, 15-minute drive from Disney. It's just a small, really cool stadium. You go there, what you see, honestly, the people typically in the stands are elderly folks in South Florida who live down there and buy season tickets to the games, and they're just enjoying their afternoons. And I personally prefer that experience, the smaller experience. You could go to a major league game at home. You do that in your home city if you're fortunate to have a team. But this spring training experience is only in Florida or Arizona. And that's the fun, that small, intimate, up close and personal. Let me see my favorite baseball star in a stadium with 4,000 seats.
Oh, my gosh. That's going to be me. One of the elderly folks with season tickets to a spring training facility. That will be me someday. I'm just telling you. Well, plus, I mean, I would imagine, too, at spring training, you get to see a lot of the legends come back sometimes just to check in. But I know with the Cardinals, it's very important within the organization that folks like, you know, Willie McGee and Ozzie Smith and, you know, other great Cardinals, Bob Gibson, you know, they come back and mentor some of the rookies and the younger players, which I'd imagine, you know, being an older person, that'd be pretty exciting because those are folks of their era that they're getting to see not play, but, you know, just get to see them around the facility.
You'll be seeing Albert Pujols one day when you're retired, you're done working, you're going to Cardinals camp every single day, and Albert Strutt is hanging around teaching some kid who's not even born yet how to get ready for a big league season.
Oh, man, you don't know how excited St. Louis is for him coming back this summer with the Angels because it'll be his first trip back. And, you know, a little rough feelings right when it happened when we had to sever the relationship. But, man, he's a good guy. So we're glad to have Albert back. Well, let's talk some Disney. Sorry if you're not a baseball fan. And I'm from St. Louis. I can't help it. It's in my blood. Let's talk about your trip. You guys went down over Christmas. So who went with you and where'd you guys stay and all that good stuff?
Yeah, we had an interesting group. So it was obviously my wife and me. My brother and sister came down there. My brother's just turned 26. My sister's 22. And then my parents also came down, all from the New York area. I work in New York. I grew up in New York. So we all came down. So it was kind of a eclectic crew of like six, mostly adults. Am I an adult? I'm 31 now. So I guess I have to call myself an adult.
You gotta call yourself that. You don't have to.
I guess
to
I have
it.
To at least yeah. call myself that. But yeah, so we all went down. And so I travel a lot for work. I should point this out. It's one of the perks and downsides of my job. I travel a lot for work. So I have accumulated a obscene amount of hotel points over the years. So I tend to almost always stay at the Swan and Dolphin because I could stay there for free on my points, which is a great perk because I really like those properties. I understand the downside to them. I totally understand. I think I've heard you say you don't care for them much. And I completely understand why, because they are not themed. It's not the Polynesian. It's not the Grand Floridian. In some ways, it's not even Pop Century. But I like them because I care very much about the location. And they're in a phenomenal location. Being able to walk to Epcot, being able to walk to the studios if you're able, or a short boat ride very close to the boardwalk. I love that location. And the reality is the Swan Dolphin, even if you're paying with cash, is almost always significantly cheaper than the Beach Club, Yacht Club, Boardwalk, sort of in the same location. So it works for me. I don't spend a lot of time in the room anyway. So I'm happy just to dump some points and feel like I'm really in the magic the second I step out the front door, even if I might not feel it in the room.
No, I get it, because those rooms are sweet. What I told my wife was, you can't beat the location, just like you said. I mean, you are just literally right there, just in the dead center, the heartbeat of Walt Disney World, able to walk the two parks and hop, skip, and a jump. And the room was great. The bed was awesome. Like, just great dining within the hotel. I told her, like, if this hotel was anywhere other than in the middle of Walt Disney World, I'd be just dying over this. This is incredible. And Disney did put us up for a media event, so like it was a free room for a couple nights, so I really couldn't complain about anything. But I'm just, you know, I've grown up with, you know, even just the values. Like I said, like Pop Century was like our place we always went. So there's theming everywhere. And the food court has, you know, everything's Mickey themed. And it's just, you know, that's kind of what my background was. But the Swan and the Dolphin, they're a great place to stay. It's just, you know, it just doesn't have that over-the-top Disney touch everywhere, but it more than makes up for it with amenities and location. I agree with you.
Yeah, they are nice hotels, too. Like, the rooms are great. The rooms, honestly, are larger, and there really are, the rooms, I'd say, are generally better than almost all the Disney hotels in terms of the size. They're pretty big rooms. The beds are extremely comfortable because they're Westin beds, mm-hmm. or one's a Sheraton, one's a Westin, so... Look, I totally respect and understand anyone who feels that need to be sort of immersed in the magic 24 hours a day, 7 days a week while they're there, and I respect that. But you know, I also kind of appreciate at times after a very sort of stimulating day to be able to retreat somewhere that's a little bit quieter. It's not quiet. It's not like we're out in the woods somewhere. Still, a ton of people, a ton of kids, a lot of people running around, a lot of business people also as well. After the baseball winter meetings, I've been at the Swan and Dolphin twice in my career. So I've been there for some conferences as well. But I kind of like being able to retreat up to the room, a little quieter. I could see the boardwalk or sometimes even Epcot from my window, depending on which room I have, and ready to go back and rock out to the parks the next morning.
Man, sounds good. So, you know, it's been a couple months since the trip. You guys had, you know, a bunch of adults going down, a lot different than a lot of the trip reports we have here on Mondays where families taking the kids. What are some of the memories? You know, we don't have to go like chronological with what you did on the trip, but looking back, you know, a couple months later, what stood out as highlights of this trip? What were some of the most memorable moments?
Yeah, so it was an interesting trip because my brother got sick, ended up with strep throat. So my having to find a place to take him to a walk-in clinic, that was memorable. I wouldn't necessarily call it a highlight. It was a low light. I would not advise having that happen to you. So he unfortunately had to sit out about half the trip as he was recovering with a pretty high fever, which he came down with. We were literally sitting at Satuli Canteen about to get our Satuli bowls, and he goes, I don't feel that well. Then I'm probably fine. And then we're about to go on get our fast passes, I think, to Everest, or maybe it was a Flight of Passage. He goes, you know, I'm really not feeling it. I'm going to go back to the room. And that was the last we saw him for the rest of the trip.
Oh my gosh.
That was a bummer, but there was a lot of good parts too. Got to experience Toy Story Land for the first time. It was funny. My wife and I were out of the Magic Kingdom the night before until maybe midnight. We basically closed it down, which is very rare for her. She's a teacher, like you ones were. So you understand, as a teacher, staying up past like 9:30 is a challenge.
It's still a struggle for me to stay up till 10. I don't know how you guys do it on the East Coast, waiting until 11 for the news. I couldn't do it.
I don't know how she did it, but sometimes we were just hanging out in the park. She really wanted to do it. So we leave at midnight, and I go, all right, well, you know, if we're going to go to Toy Story Land, I don't know when we'll be able to go because it's over Christmas. It was right smack in Christmas and New Year's. The lines, of course, are pretty extraordinary for almost every attraction, but especially Toy Story Land. And it turned out that next day, Toy Story Land was opening, I think it's around 8 a.m. It was extra magic hours. It was opening very, very early. And I said, look, if we don't get there by 7:30, the lines for everything there is going to be 4 hours long. We're not going to be able to do it. We don't like waiting on lines very much. If the line's too long, we just skip it. We get to go a lot, fortunately, so we tend not to do it. So I thought she'd say, all right, well, I guess we'll catch it next time. And now it's literally after midnight. She goes, no, I really want to go. I'm setting the alarm for 6:30.
Oh.
I go, really? She goes, no, I swear I'm going to wake up. And lo and behold, 6:30 comes. She hopped right out of bed. And we walked over the studios. We got there at 7:40, and we were on Slinky Dog Dash a little after 8. So who knew? That was a whole new side of her. Ever since then, when she says, I'm too tired to do something, I say, no, you're not. I saw you wake up at 6:30 after going to Magic Kingdom at midnight to go to Toy Story Land. Pretend it's the same thing.
Well, you got to hold that. You know, she's going to always say, well, it's only because, you know, I wanted to go to Toy Story Land and ride the attractions and, you know, all that stuff. But now, you're a big Disney fan. And folks, you got to follow Jared on Twitter because during the ball season, he'll make parallels between baseball and Walt Disney World many times, which I always enjoy following you on there because, I think you try to get some of your other writers and your readers and stuff, just checking in to see if they understand some of the Disney culture that's out there, which I always get a kick out of. But, you know, you're a huge Disney fan. What did you think of Toy Story Land when you first saw it? Were you overwhelmed? Did it meet your expectations? Were you underwhelmed? I mean, I just like to hear everybody's thoughts because, you know, I think it's kind of all over the place for people.
Yeah, I think my expectations were set appropriately, if that makes sense, which helps. I think I kind of knew that this was not going to be Pandora. This was not going to be what Galaxy's Edge is going to be. It's not quite that level of expenditure. It's not quite that level of immersiveness. But for what it was, I enjoyed it. I thought Slinky Dog Dash actually was a more fun ride than it looked, if that makes sense. So you kind of see it from the ground. And now it's a fun-looking sort of outdoor roller coaster, but nothing too spectacular. But when you're on it, it was really fun. Now, would I wait an hour for it? No, probably not. But would I make it a priority to try to get a fast pass for it on my next trip if I can? Yeah, I probably would. Like, we're not big planners, honestly. Like, we're not really big planners. We've been to the parks a lot, especially with a bunch of adults. We're very much of the mindset of, like, all right, we'll catch it if we can. We tend to book our trips very close in to the date, which I think sends a lot of big planners, like, into this crazy psycho tailspin. They can't even imagine what it's like to, like, book a trip, like, 2 or 3 weeks before, which we have done. I actually remember for an anniversary, one of our anniversaries, like our second anniversary, wedding anniversary, we had the weekend and it was like literally a day before. And I'm like, why don't we just fly down to Orlando tomorrow night on airline points and go to the Magic Kingdom on Saturday? That was the day before we went and we just did it, you know? So we're kind of used to flying by the seat of our pants. But like over Christmas, you do need to do some planning.
Yeah, a little bit.
To some extent, because it is really, really crowded. But like, if you know how to use the system and you are comfortable sort of missing some things, it's really not that bad. Like, we're big morning people. I'm very big on, like, get to the park early, take a break in the afternoon. So we were there close to rope drop most days. We'd have some fast passes in the morning. And what also surprised me is how easy the rolling fast passes were, even over the busiest days of the year. You know, there was one afternoon in Epcot. This was probably December like 29th, 28th, like the busiest weekend of the year. And in one afternoon between the hours of 2 and 5, were able to get rolling fast passes for Soarin and Test Track.
Man.
So, yeah, really, you had to fill around with the app a little bit, but it came up really the only thing that I never saw a rolling fast pass come up for ever was Flight of Passage, the Toy Story Land new attractions in Toy Story Land. Toy Story Mania, I did see some rolling fast passes. The new attractions, no. And that's really about it. Flight of Passage and not really much else. Maybe Frozen never popped up. I wasn't really looking for it. But generally speaking, if you're willing to sort of in line or at lunch or flip through the app a little bit, even that time of year, stuff pops up because people are canceling. People are, their fast passes are expiring. And there you go. So even without that much planning, we were able to do pretty much everything we wanted to do.
That's a great point, too, because, you know, I went down for Marathon Weekend without one fast pass, without an ADR. You know, it's totally new for me. You know, I plan trips for a living. That's what I do every day for my guests. But I knew I was going solo. And like you said, if you get to go more often than a lot of people are, you know, I'm very lucky I get to go pretty often. So if I didn't get to go on, you know, say Slinky Dog, which I didn't go on during that trip, it didn't really break my heart. I'd have liked to have ridden it, but it wasn't a priority, you know, so much that it would have, you know, made me sad if I missed it. But yeah, I had a great trip. You know, it opens up a lot of opportunities to just kind of do things at the, you know, the spur of the moment and just relax. You know, I was very relaxed. I walked into restaurants. I had sit down meals, but I just, you know, went places where you can get a walk up. And, you know, it's kind of like 10 years ago before all the Midas experience stuff. But it was really relaxing. But like you said, you got to have kind of the right circumstances for that to fly. And over Christmas, you do have to have some basic plan.
Yeah. Like people think, I think Christmas that week over at Disney really is, is a matter of expectations. It is crowded. I'm not going to sit here and tell you it's not extremely crowded. It is. But I don't think it's the sort of wall-to-wall mass of humanity. And I think some people expect, who have never seen it, where like you can't walk. Now, I've been to Disneyland over Christmas week, and that is that. You cannot walk in Disneyland over the week of Christmas. It is just too small, the number of people there. That's a whole other podcast for a whole other guest. But in the Florida parks, you never really feel like you're crushed in or you can't sort of move around. And the reality is in most parks, except for the biggest attractions, the lines are not as insane as you think, especially early in the day. At Animal Kingdom, for instance, everybody runs the Flight of Passage. Everybody. And I understand why. It's a great ride. But there's an hour or two at the beginning of the day at Animal Kingdom where if you don't care about Flight of Passage, you have a fast pass for it later, everything else is empty. Still,
yeah, yes.
Roughly empty at Hollywood Studios. Everyone's running to, even over Christmas, everyone ran to Toy Story Land, and there's no line at Rock and Roller Coaster for an hour, very little line, you know? At Magic Kingdom, too. If people are running to Peter Pan, they're running to the Mine Train. And if you're willing to kind of go against the flow and just sort of see things on a more leisurely pace, it's really not so bad. One recommendation that I found useful for that week, because my wife's a teacher, so we often have to travel during busy times. We have found that making ADRs for lunch has been a very effective strategy for us. So typically we'd always do a counter server's lunch and maybe do a table server's dinner. But over that week, we found it useful to flip those, or even some days do two table service meals if the lunch is sort of lighter. Because it's really nice when it gets really crowded in the middle of the day to have that reservation to kind of sneak away to for an hour, 2 hours. Sometimes you kind of linger. So we had a lunch, for instance, at the Plaza, which is basically counter service.
Yep. In terms of food, you know, quality. When you were saying that story, I'm thinking the Plaza is the place I would go, because you're right. It's light, but it's a table service restaurant.
We had a lunch as well at a Spice World table over in Epcot, where we sat outside and we didn't get entrees. We just shared a whole bunch of Mediterranean small plates for the table. We all just sort of picked and we sat out there for an hour and a half, and it was quiet and very, very pleasant, and it sort of recharges you. So we found that to be a good strategy, because right when the crowds are getting bad, you have somewhere sort of to duck away to. And that we had table service lunches out of our 4 days in the park, like on two or three of them we did, and we found that to be useful. And mobile ordering for counter service has really helped a lot too with crowds. I'm sure all people listening to this know about that already and use it, but man, it's amazing how few people really know how to use that or seem to be using it.
I know. Like, I walked into, you know, you mentioned Satouli Canteen. You know, I didn't know where I wanted to eat when I was there over Marathon. And I decided, you know, it's kind of, I love that. Actually, that's probably the reason I went to Animal Kingdom that day, was because I wanted the bowl. I love that place. But I wasn't thinking about mobile ordering. But then I walked in, I saw there was a huge line. So even if you walk in and you're in line, pull out the app, mobile order, and you'll still get your food well longer, you know, well quicker than just waiting in the line. Even if you're actually in the restaurant when you pull out your app, I think that's a great tip too. It doesn't have to be something you do 30 minutes ahead of time.
Right. I also like, it's a Satouli Canteen did this, and a few of the other counter service places are doing this too, which I like. Maybe this isn't work for everybody, but they were enforcing, at least on some places on some days, you weren't allowed to go to a table. You would get your food, you'd get your tray, and there's actually would be a cast member sort of stationed at the register who would ask how many people are you, and then sort of bring you to a table, which I personally like that. It sort of prevents people sort of just taking tables who don't have food in front of them. It's sort of a really organized system. I don't know if Satouli Canteen or others do that all the time now. I personally hadn't seen it before, but I thought it was a pretty good system to sort of have someone facilitating that. I know I've also seen that in the past at some of the Harry Potter restaurants at that other park we're not allowed to talk about on this show. I personally like that system as well. That might just be a Christmas only thing because of the crowds.
I know. Say at the same at Santulli, they also had when I was there for Marathon, they had a lot of tables that were designated for like parties of eight or more. They had these little, you know, tents that were empty. So I was by myself. So obviously I wasn't sitting at this big old table. I mean, that's just common sense, but it was so crowded that day that I ended up I found like a couple that, you know, they're sitting like at a table for six and they were at the end. I'm like, do you mind if I sit at this end? I just want to eat my bowl real quick. And they were great. You know, and you make friends and that's how it goes. So yeah, I like that people aren't camping out too. I'm with you because sometimes people just sit there to cool off, but you know what, if you have food and you don't have anywhere to sit, that stinks. So
that's a bummer.
It is, totally. So give us a couple more highlights from the trip, though, because like you said, positives and negatives to being down there at Christmas. You got a lot more opportunity to see different things you can't see at the time of the year, but you're dealing with crowds too. So what still sticks out?
Yeah, look, park hours were great. That's one thing I do love. If you're either an early morning person or a late night person, the hours are going to benefit you because the parks open really, really early. Magic Kingdom opened at 7 a.m. With extra magic hours, at least a couple of the days. I don't think I ever got there quite that early, but man, I think it'd be pretty fun to get there at, you know, before 7 a.m. and see what Main Street looks like when the sun's still just coming up. That's true. That's a really cool experience. We got a reservation at Ohana. I think that's actually an interesting thing to talk about is Ohana. Everyone thinks about Ohana as being so hard to get those reservations, so crowded. I got that reservation to Ohana, which I think is still one of the most challenging reservations to get.
Top three.
I got the reservation. Yeah, I got it maybe 3 weeks before. Touring Plans is one of your sponsors, right? So I'm allowed to talk about Touring Plans. The Touring Plans dining reservation finder, if you don't know about that tool, awesome tool. You could put in a date and time in a restaurant you want, and it automatically checks your reservations for you. One day, about 2 or 3 weeks before the trip, text popped up on my phone, Ohana reservation at the time you asked for. I booked it right then and there. So I thought that was pretty cool. And that was really fun because my brother and sister really like Ohana. I don't love it, but I think it's a really fun experience. And I thought it was really cool. I told them we're not going to be able to go. I'm sorry, it's all sold out. And then all of a sudden, we were there. So that worked out really well. That's sort of another example of like, maybe it's not quite as insane that time of year as you think.
Yeah, I think some of these things are more fluid than we tend to realize. You know, I think that we've been trained over the last 5 to 10 years that Ohana's impossible to get. You know, kind of like back in the day, you were never going to get in Cinderella's Royal Table for breakfast unless like you were blessed by some fairy walking down Main Street USA. And I think you're right. I mean, everything's attainable. You know, you can get that Slinky Dog or Seven Dwarfs Mine Train or Flight of Passage Fast Pass. It's just you have to think about, you maybe not even get the Fast Pass, but you can definitely experience the attraction or eat at any restaurant you want. You just have to be creative. And I think the lesson, too, is you just got to be persistent. And eventually it might come around.
Absolutely. And another thing that really stood out to me on this trip, and like this is not a secret, I guess, to many of your listeners, but you know, it was a little bit to me was just how much I find myself loving Animal Kingdom these days. It's really risen up the ranks to be really... I don't know if I can say it's my favorite park. It's kind of hard to ever pass Magic Kingdom for nostalgic reasons, but you know, I always would always say, well, Epcot's my number two. I'd probably spend more time in Epcot than any other park. But I really found myself loving the Animal Kingdom and feeling like I wanted more time there, which is, you know, that's new. That's a new experience for me. It used to be, you know, I really did feel like I could sort of see it in half a day or two-thirds of a day. But now I feel like I want to be there more. And I just love walking around there. I just love the way it feels. I love the way it looks. I love that it's a Disney park that I still feel like, having been there still so many times on Animal Kingdom, I still kind of feel a little bit lost sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like, I still sometimes Animal Kingdom, where I'm like, wait, I don't actually know which way to go.
Me too.
And I kind of like that. I kind of like that sort of mysterious feeling, because I never get that in Magic Kingdom. I could literally close my eyes and tell you literally every single storefront in the Magic Kingdom. Every inch of that park is burned in my brain. The Animal Kingdom, there's still these pathways. I'm like, I don't think I've ever been here, or if I have, I don't know where I am. And that was just kind of fun. Like, I really enjoyed that. Pandora's obviously really helped a lot. I really do like Flight of Passage. I wouldn't say it's my favorite Disney attraction by any means, but I am wowed by it. Like, from a technological standpoint, I think it's unlike anything they've done before. So that's like really cool. And I love Satouli Canteen. So Animal Kingdom has really become a place that I love. Is, you know, for my wife and I, Epcot's always going to be a special place to us. Is where we spend most of our time. We have spent many trips doing almost nothing but just walk around World Showcase for hours and hours and hours. We love the Voices of Liberty, and this is the first time we got to see them doing Christmas holiday type music instead of the typical Americana folk music fair. So that was really fun. We love Voice of Liberty. They even sang a medley of Hanukkah songs, which
nice. We
appreciated. At least we found it interesting.
That's cool. That's super cool. Now, let me ask you this, because, you know, you're definitely tuned in with things happening. There's so much change happening to the Walt Disney World Resort right now with, you know, we have new hotels, Riviera. You got the one going in over by Wilderness Lodge. You have the Grand Destino Tower at Coronado Springs. Now we have the gondola system going in. Galaxy's Edge, of course, is going to be opening here soon. What has you most excited over the next few years at Walt Disney World? Is there anything that man, you keep following and you're the most excited about, or anything like that?
Well, look, I'm excited for Galaxy's Edge the way I'm sure everybody is, because I truly believe that the experience is going to be unparalleled, at least for anything Disney's ever done before. I am sure those attractions, both of them, are going to be spectacular. It's going to be really, really impressive. I sort of view Pandora as kind of a trial run for Galaxy's Edge. I think Pandora's great. I really do believe Galaxy's Edge is going to be a step forward. And it really has to be, because I am not what you would call a Star Wars fan by any stretch. I have seen all the movies. I enjoy them. I am not like a hardcore fan where I like get into the lore the way many people do. But that doesn't really make me less excited, because I don't care about Avatar one bit, but I don't really think about the movie when I'm at Pandora, and I'm enough of a Star Wars fan to appreciate what's going to be Galaxy's Edge. And I just appreciate the technology. As you know, there is no fan base bigger than the Star Wars fan base, or more rabid than the Star Wars fan base. The expectations are so high, right? I mean, the only franchise that even comes close to rivaling Star Wars in terms of sort of rabid fan base is, again, that pesky little wizard that is down the road, right? So that's sort of what that set the bar, right? That was the bar for what this kind of experience can be. And the Wizarding World of Harry Potter, if you've not been there, my wife is a hardcore Harry Potter fan the way I am with Disney. So I have spent some time there. It is spectacular. And it is in many ways, at least the Wizarding World, something unlike Disney. I don't think it's quite replicated entirely yet. But I believe not only will they replicate it with Galaxy's Edge, I expect it to surpass them, because that's where the bar is, and Disney's never satisfied to be under the bar. They have to jump over the bar. And I expect them to do that with this. So I'm excited for that. However, I'm really nervous about the crowds. So I might not get there for a few years because, oh my God, I cannot imagine. Are people camping out yet? I'm sure they will be soon if they're not there yet. So that could be crazy. But more attainably, I really love what's gone on at Disney Springs. Just loved it. I really had no love for Downtown Disney the old way. I never really spent time there. I didn't really enjoy it. I didn't think there was much there of interest. But What they've done is not only is it gorgeous, I think some of the restaurants they put down there are really good. They're actually among my favorite places to eat at Walt Disney World entirely. And I'm really spoiled living in the New York area. We have restaurants, some of the best in the world. In my city, I travel for work and get to eat at the best restaurants in other cities on other people's dimes, my company's dimes. So that's really fun. But there's some places at Disney Springs that I really love, Morimoto Asia being one in particular that I've really enjoyed recent trips. We were at the Boathouse on this last trip. Really, really enjoyed that experience. So yeah, I'm really excited to see how that continues to progress over the next few years.
Man, yeah, I love getting your perspective because you have a much more worldly outlook on things than I do. You know, just being from St. Louis and not traveling, except the only place I ever go. It's like, if you look at my travel log, it's Columbia, Missouri for the football games at Mizzou. And then, well, now we don't have any bowl games apparently this next year, but that's another story. Or to Orlando. So I don't get to see, you know, I want to go to New York sometime and check it all out. But that's cool that you have that perspective on the dining at Disney Springs, because I find it very exciting, you know, being from the Midwest, but, you know, somebody that has the world at their hands and, you know, you've had all these great experiences. You think Disney Springs really hits the mark kind of as far as variety and quality of food down there?
Yeah, I think there's definitely some places that really, and I don't say this to sound snobby, so forgive me, this might sound a little bit, but I don't mean it this way. There's some places at Disney Springs that I would eat at if I had them at home. And there really aren't that many places at Disney property I'd probably say that about. There's places I love at Walt Disney World, and I love them for a variety of reasons, whether it's an emotional reason or the experience. But there's some places at Disney Springs that, you know, just the food itself, if it were in my hometown here, I would probably go. Like I said, Morimoto Asia being one that really stands out. I really like Frontera Cocina, which I don't hear talked about very much.
I like it too.
The Rick Bayless restaurant. Yeah, like I've been to Frontera Grill, which is Rick Bayless's first restaurant in Chicago. It's been there for 30 years or 25 years. I love that joint too. And it's very similar, this one in Florida. It's not a complete remake of Frontera Grill. If you are from Chicago and know what I'm talking about, but it's got that same sort of Rick Bayless touch that I really, really enjoy. And hey, you might be from St. Louis, but I've had some really good Italian dinners in St. Louis in my travels there before. So
we have the T-Ravs. We have the toasted raviolis to the hill. Yeah.
The hill. There's a place, Trattoria Marcella.
Yep.
Up on the hill. I don't know if you know that place.
I've been there. Yep.
Really good. Really enjoy that place.
Yes. Yeah. See, we do. Have, yeah. We actually do have really good Italian food here in St. Louis. All right. So we got to kind of close this out. I could talk for another 2 hours, but we got to close this out. So I got two very important questions. One surrounds my friend Matt Hotchberg, which I haven't talked to him as much lately as I should have.
My friend Matt Hotchberg, too.
Yes, your friend Matt Hotchberg. So the Marlins, are they ever coming back? I mean, it's like, are they going to stay in the major leagues? Or what's the story for Matt? Is he ever going to be able to wear those fish on the shirt proudly?
Funny story about Matt Hotchberg. He and I met at a spring training game. That's how we became friends.
Nice.
He was up in Port St. Lucie watching the Marlins play the Mets, and that's where we first met. The answer is, I guess one day, but I don't actually know when. And man, Derek Jeter, I grew up in New York. You were a hero when I was a kid. So you better figure something else out, my man, because this ain't working. I got to actually spend some time. I got to interview Derek last spring training in Jupiter during a game for a couple of innings. I sat with him up in his little suite there and got to hear about his plans for the Marlins. And, you know, he made him sound good. So I guess we'll see.
the stadium entices me, the Major League Stadium. I love the statue they used to have out in the outfield. Of course, I've gotten rid of that, and they got the aquarium for the backstop there. It's an interesting place. I've always wanted to go there just to say I've gone there, but yeah, it's kind of rough. So here's the last question of the day, the most important question that I was like, okay, this is the one question I got to ask. Who, and be honest, don't just say it because I'm here, and you probably won't. Who's winning the National League Central? I'm not even going to ask about the American League East because that would just be a whole war. So go National League Central, Brewers, Cardinals, or I can't even say it, the Cubs, or maybe the Reds are in this now. They've made some moves this winter.
Man, yeah, it's a really competitive division. I'll give you the good news. Here's the good news. I don't think the Cubs are going to win the Central.
Oh, God, thank you.
I don't. I think the Cubs have taken I think the Cubs have taken a little bit of a step back. I'm not saying the Cubs are done. I'm not saying this great era of Cubs baseball is over. But, yeah, you know, they didn't win the division last year, and I think they took a step back. Man, it must have been tough for you last summer watching the Cardinals just kind of fade away at the end there after that incredible ride where they sort of brought themselves back into contention and fell off at the end there.
Yeah, we buried ourselves early. And, I mean, that's just, you know, it was frustrating. I mean, we did have a really hot streak there. But, okay, I'm sure Harper's signed by now, by the time this comes out, Machado as well. Last thing, I got to tell you, because I don't want the Cardinals to have Harper. I want the Cardinals. I like what we did with Goldschmidt. I'm glad that we're filling a need. He seems like a team guy. So I think we have a chance this year in the Central, right? We're going to be in that fight, right?
Let me tell you something about Paul Goldschmidt. First of all, he's a great player, a great player. Let me tell you something else about Paul Goldschmidt. That man was born to play for the St. Louis Cardinals.
Yes.
There is no player I could think of that was more born to play for the Cardinals. Paul Goldschmidt is a very nice individual. I have met him many times when he's on the Diamondbacks. He is quite possibly the most boring person to talk to I have ever met in all of baseball. Very much on purpose, if you're Paul Goldschmidt. But the dude just puts his head down, goes to work, doesn't talk, is incredibly terrible to interview because he will not say anything. And I would expect him to sign like a 6-year extension with the Cardinals and very quietly hit 30 homers a year for the next 6 years, and we'll never hear from him again. And it's just, that's just how it's going to go for Paul Goldschmidt. So that's the Cardinal way, right? No one, you know, you just sort of put your head down, do your work, and, you know, that's what they do. So I think the Cardinals have a shot. I think the Brewers are going to be really tough, though.
I know.
Brewers are really, really good.
I like the Brewers. You know, I wanted Yelich over Ozuna, but that's a whole nother podcast. But, yeah, so, maybe Adam Wainwright will get a hold of Goldschmidt and get him some personality there with the press. I don't know. Wainwright's my favorite all-time Cardinal of all of them. I love
really?
The guy. I love the guy. And hope he can have one last good season and then call it a career.
Fun.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
I love that.
All right, well, Jared, thanks. We got to wrap this up, man. I'll talk baseball all day. But thanks so much for coming on, sharing your expertise about spring training and this recent trip. And we'll have to get you on here sooner rather than later and talk some more here.
I hope so. That was really fun.
All righty. Don't forget today's show brought to you by our friends over at TheRunningBuddy.com. Great Disney collection backpacks, purses for everybody heading down on your next Disney vacation. But for our runners, don't forget they have that little buddy pouch that I use for all my races and my runs. I've had this thing literally for 6 years. Every run over, I looked at my Runkeeper, over 11,000 miles of running, and it's been with me every time. Haven't lost an iPhone. Knock on wood, it's secure, it's not going anywhere. You need the same. So check out all the great products over at TheRunningBuddy.com. 10% off with your purchase. Just put in BRGuest at checkout. And don't forget about our friends. Jared mentioned them, TouringPlans.com. Len and the folks over there keeping you out of lines and see the most amount of attractions possible on your next Disney or Universal vacation. And there's lots of other services they offer, like Jared said, the ADR finder and things like that, room views. So just drop by the site today. Let them know you heard about them here on the BR Guest Podcast over at touringplans.com. Give us some support when you do that online shopping on Amazon. It's brguestpodcast.com/Amazon. We appreciate you taking care of us there. And give us a follow on the social media. We're on Instagram and Twitter at BeOurGuestMike and at BeOurGuestPod. And we've got a great Facebook page at facebook.com/BeOurGuestPodcast. And Jared, real quick before we get out of here, where can folks follow you on social media? Because again, you are a lot of fun to follow during baseball season. All year, but I love it during baseball season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm easy to find. I'm just at Jared Diamond on Twitter, J-A-R-E-D Diamond. I get a lot of tweets from people thinking I'm a jewelry store.
I never even made that connection.
I don't know if the jewelry store has a Twitter account, but a lot of people think it's me. It's not. Just at Jared Diamond, J-A-R-E-D Diamond, just like baseball diamond. I was born to do this job.
How did I never make that connection? The Galleria of Jewelry. Yeah, it's like, I never would have made that connection. But now that you say that, I could see it. So, give Jared a follow. He's a good guy to follow on social media. So, Jared, thanks again for your time. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot. It was fun.
All right, we're going to get out of here. Let's get back to work here on a Monday. So thanks for checking in, and we will see you real soon.
You've been listening to the Be Our Guest Walt Disney World Trip Planning Podcast. If you have questions, comments, or would like to be a guest on the show, please visit our website at brguestpodcast.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you real soon.
With a flash out of Fordham, they knocked in runs and scored them. The Gas House Gang was full of fight and nerve. The Redbirds were the rage, the wild horse of the Osage, and Paul and Dizzy were keeping them busy with heat and curves. I'm talking baseball, Hornsby, Haynes, and Ripper, Cardinal baseball. Leo was the Lipper, Ducky, Country, Red, Karowski too, and Slatsy had that golden glove of glue. Talking baseball, baseball in St. Louis. With that man, no one could match him. Mort pitching, Walker catching. St. Louis was another Cooperstown. Rookies of the year, Bill and Wally started here. Brock on the run, the Cardinals won and were pennant bound. I'm talking baseball. Javier and Carlton, Cardinals baseball. Billy White and Washburn, Boyer, Grote, and Kurt McCarver too. Cepeda was an MVP, it's true. We're talking baseball, baseball in St. Louis. Now this town on the Mississippi is handy with the blues. Suda had this nasty splitter, Big John Mize, what a hitter. Gibson, what a strikeout spree. Ozzie Smith and Willie McGee.